Hi, this is Joel Richardson, founder of Soul Joel Productions. I want to thank you for watching this and all of our content on Soul Joel TV. Just keep it in mind, every time you see this logo, that's our stamp of approval to know that it's quality content. So thank you for watching this, and now enjoy the show.
Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The pictures have got small.
Your first one's on us.
Welcome to the desk is shaking. The camera comes on and your desk is shaking. That's how.
It's so bad.
Ask me what's bad.
Richie, what's bad with that? What's wrong with that?
This is bad. Anyway, do the intro.
Welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Rigadonna, and with me as always...
Richie Burns. It's so bad.
You laugh so hard.
Joel just wrote, "I'm still here." He's in the back. Oh my god! Wow.
I think I'd like watch. I next time we do the show, I want to watch you watch that.
Yeah, you have to.
Joey, is there any way we can set up?
Yeah.
That we can watch Richie's reaction while that's playing. Like a reaction shot video.
Please.
We need to do that because I've never seen somebody laugh so hard. Oh, Joey said we can make it happen.
All right. You know what it reminds me of? Like when you're in the Poconos at a gig and it's like there's like a Channel 22 and they have all local, like there's always like a dance going on or something, and then they cut to some, "Hi, we can't stay in business without you." So, you're like, oh my god, do people really talk this badly? And then
it reminds me of like if a space alien came down and they read a book like how to act like a human. Like, "Hey everybody, how's your local sports team? I can't believe they won or lost the big game last week." I love you, Joel. I love you. So hey, Flammers in the house.
Flammers in the house.
I also saw Mike Albanese popped on. What up, Albanese?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Joey Cola's in the house.
I'm excited.
That's it. That's because of our guest.
Yeah, we got a great guest today, man.
We got quite the. This guy's going to tell some good stories.
We should put it right up front that this is not going to be a clean show.
It is not. No. In honor of our guest today, fuck everybody. Okay.
Why don't you introduce him?
I've been watching the news.
Oh.
Okay. And I realize that people tend to make mistakes like we do.
We make them all the time, but they're expected.
Putting Joel up front was a mistake. But so,
Richie, you stop that now.
I can't wait for later when Joel tells me I've had enough of this.
But I mean, people expect us to have the blunders, the screw ups.
But
we're idiots.
You know, we sit here, we do our show. Everybody's home. We're home. You're home. Everybody's home. We're doing our show from home. And you do wonder at times, like, what do people do?
Remember that one clip a long time ago? The guy was giving the news report for the BBC, and the kid came bursting through the door. And then there was, like, a news reporter, and he's giving a very serious speech about like Afghanistan, and all of a sudden in the back of the door bursts open and this little kid comes running in and this woman comes running in and grabs the kid and drags him out.
No. Well, there was a clip yesterday that's gone viral, and it's pretty funny, and it was a reporter from Good Morning America. He was home, and Joey, run the clip. Oh, and wait, don't run it. This is called Drinks, Jokes, and screw ups.
Bum, bum, bum.
But the companies do say they will scale up the program if it is successful, guys.
Very cool. We love it, Will. Thank you.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman's son on TV with.
So he was in.
He's in his underwear.
Yeah, he pulled the full Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, that's Will. Yeah, yes. That's Will Reeve. He's Christopher Reeve's son, and apparently he, like his father, who was in his underwear in many Superman movies.
At least he had long leg underwear.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's his cock. Anyway,
and we can see his bird.
So, I just think we're going to see a lot more things like that. You know,
oh yeah, everybody's doing it from home. Did you see the big Broadway show when the guy's mic was muted and he was supposed to be singing? It was like a salute to Sondheim.
No,
he was supposed to be singing and the mic was muted, and then all of a sudden you hear somebody come in and be like, "Hey, Steve, your mic's not on."
There's a story about an actress, and I don't want to say who, but she was hated so much when she was on Broadway that they would leave her mic on when she went to the bathroom. Yeah. So, and whenever I'm doing the show, when I'm doing a warm up, if I have to, sometimes I
take it off.
I leave the mic. I like to hold my mic. I'll be back. I'm not going in there.
You can unplug it too. That's the other trick.
Well, no, but it's a wireless, so I have no control over the mic at all. You know, so I never. But so now you know. Yeah. But I just thought that was funny, man. The guy's got no pants on. He handled it well.
They busted him, what did he say?
He went on Twitter and everything and talked about it. He was very cool about it. And his mother was Dana Reeve, who we talked about last Wednesday. There's Dana Reeve.
Right.
Joey, wow, look at you prepared.
Ta-da.
And she was the star with Rob Bartlett in Rob Bartlett's play, his Broadway play.
Yeah.
She said yes, but.
I guess so. Our drinks, jokes, and screw up from yesterday was me at the grocery store.
Did you go to the store yesterday?
Then I told the story on the show. Where's and I didn't have my wallet.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Richie, how much did you drink after the show?
A lot. Hi, Cynthia. So
we got to get to our guest, buddy.
I know.
We got a great guest. We'll play a little clip.
It's a legend.
Yeah.
He's a good friend of mine. I haven't seen him in years, and I'm so happy. I called him. He said, "When do you need me?" And we got a great clip. We got a clip.
We'll play the clip, and then we'll.
I used to be in a 12-step program to load the booze up in the cellar. Stairs is a bitch when you lick it up, man. Actually, I shouldn't drink whiskey. My dad went blind drinking whiskey. So she was too stupid to take the little straws out. You can only tell a guy twice, you know? It's great to be out here, man. I'm ready for this summer to be done. I'm sick of the heat. I live in Tucson, man. I moved from New York City to Tucson, Arizona. Yeah, it don't look like it did in the brochure. My friends in New York are like, "Why would you move from New York City to Tucson?" I go, "Well, I know I'm going to burn in hell. I just want to get acclimated."
How about that?
I love this guy. I got to work with him a couple times up in Syracuse and Watertown at the Mike Kinney gig. Our good friend, let's bring him out.
Come on. How about a Ben Creed?
Ben Creed in the house. There he is. How are you buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. So you're not in Arizona anymore.
What's that?
You're not in Arizona anymore.
Oh, no. I live in Fort Worth, but I summer in Yuma.
My favorite is you were bitching about the heat in Arizona, so you went to Texas.
Yeah, wow. You miss New York?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I moved here for love. My girl of 13 years is family's out here. That's why we're out here.
Oh, right. That's cool.
It's great. And thanks for having me on the show, man. I just realized I haven't talked to more than a couple of people in the past 30 days, so my social skills are probably a little atrophied. You know what I mean?
Well,
you little rat face cocksucker. Sorry.
But you were in New York for how many years? A long time. You
20 some odd years.
Yeah. I mean, I used to always see you, Benny. I'll tell you a funny story that you're not going to remember this. The first time I met you.
Thanks for the credit.
You won't remember this. You blackout drunk.
Good.
The first time I met you, I was really new in comedy, and I had to pick you up, and we were working in Connecticut.
Do we stop in Harlem?
My car broke down before I got I had a problem with my car. My brother lent me his van, and I had to pick you up in a van that had linen in the back. My brother had a laundry. Do you remember this at all? And I remember because you were like Ben Creed. Oh, Ben Creed. And I remember I'm picking you up, and I'm expecting you to be about 55 years old at the time because you'd been in the business forever, and you get in the van. I'm like, this guy's my age. What the fuck? You started when you were 16?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Jesus.
Yeah, started when I was 16 out in L.A.
How does a 16-year-old have the balls to get on stage or serious and do stand-up? I can't imagine it.
Oh, I didn't say good.
It doesn't matter.
He's either frozen or he's having a stroke.
My teacher, it's hard to tell these days. Is that all right?
Yeah, you're all right now.
There we go.
Broke up for a minute.
Can you see me?
So you were in LA? Can you hear me?
What, did I put the camera to sleep?
Can you hear us?
I grew up in LA.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you. We sound like a couple of seniors. What? What did you say? Is it on?
So you grew up in L.A.
Now?
Yes. All right, we're having technical difficulties.
Yeah. Well, let's. I was acting in high school. Okay. Because, you know, if I start the story a fifth time, it'll get even more. You
know? Well, here's what we'll do. We'll do our drink. We'll do our joke. We'll do some bullshit, and we'll bring him back up.
We have gone weeks now. We've been doing the show over a month, right?
Yeah.
And we've had no problems. And it's every night this week now. Well, no, Monday we had problems, major problems with the guests.
Even yesterday, though, it was a little slower than normal.
Yeah, it was. I wonder why.
I bet it's because there's a trillion people doing Zoom meetings. They're eating up all the internet stuff. But so, Richie, what are you drinking tonight?
Let's get to my old favorite
Coors Light. I'm doing old school too. I thought Ben Creed's coming on Miller Lite.
There you go.
It was on sale at the beer distributor by our house. So,
he's gonna try and bang back on. So you're drinking a little Miller Lite again. You had a Miller Lite.
I got a big box of 36 of them for dirt cheap. So I'll be drinking Miller Lite probably all week.
There you go. And you have a joke for us?
I got a joke. It's a dirty one because having Mr. Creed on, I figured it would be a delight to have him hear this, but I guess he won't. So an old woman goes into a dentist's office. She walks in the dentist's office. She hikes her dress up. The dentist goes, "Oh, my God, ma'am, I'm a dentist." She goes, "I know. Herb and I got a little crazy last night. He wants his teeth back."
Oh my God.
It's an oldie but a goodie. Come on.
Goodie.
You gotta love it.
One of those, hello. Why'd you say it twice? I didn't. Anyway.
I love jokes.
So we're kicking it old school right now. It's you and me. We're waiting on Benny. Now, you know what happened that night when I drove him?
Yes. Tell me the story. Yeah.
So my brother lends me his van. I got to go in the city, pick up Benny. We're going to Connecticut. We're running late because my car broke down. And he's like, whatever. You know, like, I'm a new comic. I'm scared to death. You know, like, I'm probably getting $100 for the gig. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm never going to work for this guy again. And Benny's like, who gives a shit? You know, like, he's like. And we get there, and there's an improv group there in Connecticut.
Oh, boy.
All right. Thanks.
He's on the phone with Joe.
There he is. He's gambling. That's what he's doing. Hello, Ben.
Listen, you miserable cocksuckers. I got better things to do in this quarantine than fuck around with your digital shit.
So what happened? Did you get closer to the... No, you didn't. Did he tell you to get closer to the router?
He said my Johnson rod was out of alignment. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea how this shit works.
Well, you're back now, and that's all that matters. Yeah. I was saying to Mark that when I picked you up, we went to Connecticut.
Right.
When we got there, there was some improv group that was doing like a class or something.
Right.
And a guy and a girl came up to us, and it was a husband and wife.
Of course it was.
And the wife, the wife was saying, I really want to do stand-up comedy. I really want to do stand-up comedy. How do I get started? And it was Lisa Lampanelli.
Really?
No shit. That's.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. There was Lisa. There's Lisa right there. Yeah.
What did you tell her?
She and I told her,
you don't have a chance.
I said, don't be racist.
Call Jim Barato.
Don't curse.
Get yourself booked.
And then her husband, I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, that was the first time I met you. And I was blown away at how young you were, because you'd been known forever in the business. But now, you were talking about, you started at 16.
I was known at one point?
Yeah.
It's good to know.
So you're 16 years old. You said you kind of got cut off, but I think you said you had done some high school plays and things.
Oh, I was in my acting teacher in high school was encouraging me to go out to the Comedy Store because I kept telling him that's what I really wanted to do. And I just thought I was too young because I was 16, but I went out there on my 16th birthday and started working there.
And, most kids are trying to get their driver's license. You're trying to get stage time.
Well, you know. I mean, if you know what you want early in life, it's a good thing, I guess, you know.
Benny, who was there? Do you remember some of the comics that were like... Oh,
Jesus. Some of the guys that I was impressed with. I mean, Pryor was there a lot. Robin Williams was there a lot.
Wow. But
some of the guys like that were right before they got big were like, you know, Sam and Gary Shandling.
Right.
And, A million guys. You remember what it used to be like.
Yeah.
There was no Facebook, no internet or anything. It was just guys you would hear about, and then you'd get work on the road, and eventually you'd end up working with them.
Yeah.
And then you got to see them.
Was there an energy, though, in the air that you kind of knew these people were legends? Like, it was like, this is something really special.
Pryor already was a legend.
Well, you know, Pryor was already a legend, but... when I was in high school, I used to do shows for the student body. They loved it because they got out of class for 2 hours. Right. So no matter what I did on the stage, yeah, it's great. But at that time, was SNL just started. But maybe a few years before that. I think I was 14 when that started. I got to see Pryor live on the Sunset Strip, Monty Python at the Hollywood Bowl. Steve Martin and the Blues Brothers at the amphitheater, George Carlin a couple times, and you know, saw all these shows that were the big guys. And when I started off, the guys that I thought were, you know, hysterical were huge, were guys nobody had heard of. I mean, maybe a handful of comics, but you know, comics are a hard laugh, we're a hard audience. So the guys that you would sit there and laugh at and actually give up the credit for, you go, yeah, that guy's fucking.
Yeah.
So were your parents in the business? Were your parents in entertainment?
No.
You were just in LA by chance, so obviously you got kind of steered into comedy.
Surfed when I was a kid, was always I did some stuff in theater with the church group when I was really young, and school plays, you know. I think the first thing I did was I played all three Christmas ghosts in Christmas Carol.
He did the Christmas Carol as a one-man show.
I was like 7 or 8 years old or something.
It's Ben Creed's Christmas Carol.
And
you're going to be visited by three fucking ghosts.
My interpretation of Dickens classic. And when I got into high school, I'd done some serious acting, and I won the Shakespeare Festival for Southern California, and kind of got thrown into the mix of some stuff. But yeah, I remember going up on stage and making everybody laugh in high school, and going up on stage at the Comedy Store and just taking it in the face. Just, you know, just the worst things. All the bad mistakes, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you remember what it's like, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I still do.
And so when you remember, the first thing you do is start smiling, because it's not that bad, right? It's like, oh, my God, that was so horrible back then. Worst thing ever. And then you realize if you stay with it, it gets much worse. So those first days are nothing, man.
I had such a weird thing, because when I started, I didn't really know I even wanted to do it, so I didn't care.
Well, why did you start?
Because I worked at a comedy club.
But why would you subject yourself to such horrible rejection and heartbreak if you don't think you want to do it? You've got to be 100% sure.
Well, no, then when I was like, no, I think I really like this, and I want to give it a shot, I started bombing nonstop.
Right, as soon as you give a shit.
Yeah, when I didn't care, and it might have, I don't know if it was, I didn't care, so when I bombed, I didn't really care, so it didn't feel bad. I was just like, fuck it, I'm just filling time while they throw that guy out of the club. You know, but then when I actually tried to be a comedian, I just bombed for like 6 months straight. And then like I would have one good show that kept me going, like, oh, okay, I think I'm good.
Right? I mean, that one show.
Yeah. What other job does somebody stand up and go, you fucking suck at what you do and we want you to stop doing it? No other job, right?
I'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah. That's great. Now, how long were you in LA? What did you go, West Coast to East Coast, or was it a?
I went to New York when I was 22.
Wow.
So 6 years. What in LA. Made
you
go?
I mean, you were in a good area. It wasn't like you were in Wyoming. You were in LA.
You know what, man? Everybody that I liked, everybody that I watched, everybody that I admired did serious time in New York or was from New York, and it was just something about it. I always wanted to be there watching all those movies as a kid. It was just something I wanted to do. I didn't see the real. There was a lot of cutthroat in LA, and a lot of backstabbing, and a lot of hacks. Just what? Oh, really? You want to play games? You want to play games? I'll play games.
What are you drinking, Benny?
I'm having some wine for the heart.
Okay, good. For the
healthy.
Jordan.
Good for the heart.
It's your fruits and vegetables.
So, you came to New York at 22, but you had already. I mean, that's 6 years. Had you been doing a lot of comedy? Once you start, like when I started, and I didn't start till I was 26, I did like 5 shows over 2 years. It wasn't like,
well, remember when we were like basically starting off in New York, where you could go from New York to, you know, as far as Philly, but mostly Jersey, New York, and work. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then go do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Rascals and Dangerfields, and out here do 4 or 5 shows, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I started off, you had to wait in line. I had 3 jobs. I was on my own at 16. I had 3 jobs, and I would go and wait in line to do 3 minutes at the Comedy Store. Yeah. And I would always have to follow, like, you know, Richard Pryor, or Richard Belzer, or Robin Williams, or somebody who was, you know, already a star. And I was 16, 17 years old, right? So if you got the Laugh Stop had a couple clubs, like 3 or 4 clubs, weekend gigs, where you could make like $200 to headline, you know? So you'd be tossing that around like a street cred. Yeah, I'm doing Montclair in November. You know, it's marketing your brag. Doing Montclair in November, making it double 100, you know? They gave me a room with a bed, you know, that kind of stuff. And when I went out to work in Florida, and I'm trying to think of who got me the gig. I think it was Daily Pike got me this gig at the Comic Strip in Fort Lauderdale. And I had never worked in New York. So when I was out there, Eddie hadn't taken off yet, but Richie Tink and his manager had the place, right? Yeah. So I did real well there. So they let me come back. And then I went to New York. I worked with somebody who was booking something. I think it was Joey Novick or something, booking something in New Jersey or New York. So I just went out there with my suitcase, just went out there, left my shit in LA at my apartment. You know, you don't get to this point in your life, Rich, by just making one poor decision. It's a lifetime poor decision.
That's and you worked at Dangerfields. Nonstop.
Yeah, I walked in there with the suit and tie one night and talked to Tony Bevacqua for a while, who I gotta give credit to. Tony, the owner of Dangerfields, he hooked me up with that Rodney's apartment in the back of the club.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't charge me rent, loaned me money to get my first apartment in New York, gave me all kinds of work. I got nothing but, you know, gratitude for him. And Bobby, you know, was like
Bobby the doorman.
Yeah, he was like a father figure to me, so I fit right in that club.
Bobby, Bobby lived right around the corner from me on Staten Island, so I used to see him. He used to come jogging by my house every day before, and then when I walked into Dangerfields, he's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" Yeah. I go, "I'm a comic," and he's like, "Don't let these motherfuckers get to you. Don't let them get to you."
Oh, he could break balls without mercy. He was
yeah. And he'd say to me, like, you see that guy over there? He's a cocksucker.
He used to look out for me when the mob would come in.
Yeah.
And I'd be on stage and some guy would be wising off. You know me. I no filter, right?
Right.
He'd stand there in the doorway, you know, where you could see the light. And he'd go like this. Like, shut up. Don't say a fucking word. Do your fucking thing. You're in the 8 o'clock, you fucking paid chimp, and get off the stage. But I would, you know, go out to these guys, and then he'd have to take the brunt, you know, fucking take another ass beating for you, bastard.
And we just lost Chario.
Chario, yeah.
We got a picture with Chario. There he is.
No.
Shit.
Benny, that was March 11th. We took that
Jesus.
Picture. Nobody could walk by a stage and fart like that man.
No. That was the crop duster of all crop dusters.
I mean, he worked till he was 84, 83 or 84.
You know what, though, man? All those cats, we used to break their balls without mercy because when we first started working there, not one of those guys wasn't proficient in ball breaking.
Oh, yeah. You
know, Willie, the old waiter, Kenny Wong, the bartender.
All of them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You could walk up stage after a bad set. You thought that was the worst part of your night? Oh, wait till they got to you, man. Holy shit. They want you outside. They want you outside. Who does? The people inside. Every time you go on stage, you should be arrested for trespassing. I saw you on stage last night. You should be arrested for loitering.
Oh, God. Yeah. When I worked at Stand Up New York,
Cats in the Blind. Sorry,
I was the guy who had to go up, and when there was a heckler, and I had to go up and fill time, while this big Australian scary dude would just come over and just grab someone and yank them out. And I remember being scared to death that they would wait for me after the show because I would go up and I'd pick fights because we knew who the heckler was. So I'd go up and pick a fight. And then all of a sudden, Rich, this Australian dude, would just grab people by their necks and yank them out of the club. And I remember just being like, after the show, I'm going to get my ass kicked.
I've been doing it 44 years and there was twice where I thought it was going to happen. And once I had to use the mic stand to defend myself. I dropped a guy like that.
I had a guy. I
picked up the bass and hit him in the chin. He was out like a wet.
Really? Wow.
The other time was at Dangerfields. I was doing it was one of the weekends during the proms, right?
I knew it was going to be a prom show.
Wasn't a prom show. It was just a weekend. And there was these two off-duty Jersey cops that were drunk off their ass. I was working with Norton or something. So I get on stage, and the guy says, you know, something. He makes like two or three bald jokes, like just low-hanging fruit. Yeah, I'm bald, you know, gee, okay, great. So I think I was just in one of those moods, and I said something to the effect of, sticks and stones may break my bones, but I fucked your mother. not very clever, I admit, but for the guys in the back
effective.
Room, the
effective.
Guys in the back room, and for Bobby, they were pissing themselves, so I was So I finished my set, you know, 20 minutes on Saturday. You can't do that bad, you know. I'm doing all right. I get upstage and this fucking 6'6" monster's just standing there blocking a door, right? So I know he's coming after me, right? So I try to walk by him and he makes a move and I give everything I got, my body weight and everything, right into his chest, right? Doesn't fucking budge. Whips out a badge, whips out a jersey bag, and all I could think of is fuck jersey. You know, it's no good here. So you know where that waiter station is and the knives in that ham can?
I got
my hand buried in that can, right? This guy's gonna fucking kill me. I'm not dying in Dangerfields, all right? I'm not dying. I'm not dying in the middle spot in Dangerfields on a Saturday night. You know, get that blurb in the post.
When you walk in there, it looks like everything's black and white. Like as soon as you walk in, you're not dying in black and white.
Like one of those old mafia hit pictures, you know?
Yeah.
Face down in that candle. So Darren stepped in, Tony's son, he stepped in. He goes, all right, sure, calm down. And I'm talking, I go, what the fuck is your problem? He goes, my mother died. I'm like, all right, here we go.
Here we go.
So I tried to talk it out, but Norton was just looking at me like, I think this guy's going to kill him, you know? And I thought so, too. I thought this guy's going to fucking kill me. This is how I'm going up. So he started crying and then talking about his mom, and I just walked away. And afterwards, I remember being downstairs getting paid, and Tony, the owner, goes, hey, maybe next time not say you fucked his mom. Yeah, okay, you got a point. You know, no problem.
Well, One night I was there. I didn't do a lot.
I've seen you in action go after kids there at the Proms.
You were there, Darren.
Richie's got no fucking patience, man.
He made me get up at a prom, Mark. I can't believe you know what I'm talking about then. And I go, Darren, I don't want to do the proms. He goes, no, you can do it. I go on stage, and they start heckling. I put the mic on the floor, and I go, one at a time, line up, one at a time. I want one guy come up, I'll beat the piss out of you. Then the next guy come up, I'll beat the piss out of you. Then that one at a time.
Yeah, because none of them are going to hit a girl.
But everybody got quiet. So then I go, all right, now we know who the pussies are. I start to do my act. They start heckling. I go, two at a time, two at a time. And Darren gives me the light. I've been up for 2 minutes. I go, no, you guys in time. Come on. I beat the piss out of both of you. And I walk up. Darren's going, get off the stage. I come up and I go, all right, I think I'd be good at this. I think I can do this.
I remember walking in one time. I think you were stretching or something because I was doing like a couple different shows. It was prom night. And I came in and I walked up to Bobby and I go, how's Richie doing? Because you're on stage. He goes, take a fucking look. So it's just nothing but prom kids. And I've got this big grin on my face. And I guess they've been giving you some shit and you settled them down because you were singing. You know, you're like, when I come home to you know what? Shut your fucking mouth. And I just laughed. And I thought, okay, I'm going up after that. Sons, you know, you're a real fucking cocksucker. And it was like 20 minutes of that, and you did your time, and you ended on a big note, like you held the note, took the bow and everything. Oh, it was fucking beautiful, man. It was beautiful.
I remember a guy at a prom one night. I'm on stage, and this guy walks in with a baseball bat holder. You know the bags, the baseball bat bags? And they're 18. They're at 17, 18 years old. They can't drink, right? It's not. This guy walks in, hucks. And he's got the holder, and it's full of beer. Like, they let him in. They just checked it. I'm like, it's got fucking beer in it. What are you guys doing?
My favorite was when I'd have to work the door at those. And they were like, don't worry, none of the kids are drinking, whatever. Yeah, right. They would come in every show, like three people would throw up all over the tables.
This is the best. We're at Danger, but you know how dark it was, right? Their idea of redecorating so every year was lowering the lights. That was redecorating, right? So this girl comes in and she's got this, you know, I'm standing there, you know, by the staircase waiting to go on, right? Bobby's like, all right, stand by. And this beautiful high school girl decked out in this, I don't know how many, you know, $1,000 dress or whatever, just looking gorgeous, looking so sweet. And she looks at me and she goes, are you the guy going on? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, oh, and I saw that Bugs Bunny turn green thing, you know, and she just did like one of these and threw up all over my jeans. And then I hear, so, and it was Quentin. Please welcome Ben Creed. So I'm shaking off the diced carrots off my jeans as I'm walking on stage. God. I can't take it. I'm so fed up with my career. And I get on stage and I hear this, ugh, and somebody pukes, and it, you can hear it hit the table, right?
Splash.
Yeah, the pause between the puke and hit the table, and then you heard, ooh, he got some in my mouth. And then, and then it was all chain reaction, Bob.
You're killing me, man. That's
I'm, there, I'm looking at my watch going, okay, I got 3 minutes left, and good night. But hey, man, it paid the bills. It was great.
Yeah. The prom shows paid just as good as the regular shows. So they
I could go on the road for 6 months and then stay in New York City for 6 months and not leave and just work the city clubs and not have to get on an airplane. And the only thing he had to do was by the time he got to the club every night, because I, you know, I lived 20 blocks away, I'd walk up, and the second I would approach the club, I'd get that cold chill on my back. I'd see the tuxedos and the proms, like, you know, what the fuck am I doing, man? And then you get in there, you know, okay, we want to walk these kids. So do the same act you did 30 minutes ago. So the thing is the same show and a walk. You're like, oh, man. I could have been a contender, Charlie. It was my night.
I was fucking brutal, man.
When people
and the guys, the first timers that would come in to work with you, you know, like they'd be like you and me, like, you know, Gaffigan or Norton or some other guy. But somebody would walk in and go, hey, how's everybody doing? You're like, oh, you'll get over that hat.
Yeah, you'll get over that.
I worked in war zones for the USO. Not as bad as a prom show.
Guys would come downstairs after their set, and they would curl up on the couch and look like Glenn Close in The Big Chill. You know, that shower scene, just crying in the shower. You know, things serious about quitting it. Maybe I get snapped too late to get a trade. I should go back to school.
Oh, God.
Kevin Kramus keeps yelling, hey, bakery, open your eyes. Is there a story?
Yeah. I'm working in Little Rock, Arkansas. And they got a Wednesday night, the first night is an open mic night. So they had this woman who's very large, has a hard time breathing, and she's hosting. So every time she brings somebody up, she's going to walk back on stage. Takes a little bit of time, you know. She takes a little rest, puts her hand on the wall, waits a minute, gets up there. So I'm in the back with the owner, and he's embarrassed that I got to sit through all this shit. I'm like, whatever, you know, I don't care. So he goes, she goes, ladies and gentlemen, the next act coming to stage is a really funny guy. He's going to have you rolling in the aisle. He know how to make that bread. Please welcome Bakery. Bakery. So I'm looking at the owner going, is there a guest spot tonight? And he goes, no. And I go, who's this bakery guy? He goes, oh, I think that's you.
Bakery.
So I walk up on stage and I, come on, honey, come on up here. So I get up there and she goes, yeah. And I says, Ben Creed. Oh, well, I thought it was Bakery. Like, well, I don't know.
You want rhymes.
I don't know why you would think that, but so I spent the first 5 minutes trying to convince people. So after the show, they're like, hey, Bakery. Like
well, you know, you got guys now with names like Earthquake and shit. You could be Bakery.
No, I think the perfect name for me is Has Been Creed. See, I beat everybody to that joke, so fuck that.
That's a good joke. You were, dude, come on. You've been in everything, man.
Hey, did you notice that I'm drinking my $5 wine from a Charlie Tuna glass?
Yes.
Because things, you know, I can afford kitsch.
Who was Phil Silver's Charlie Tuna? Who was Charlie Tuna? Who did the voice? I can't remember.
Herschel Bernardi.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Are you making that up?
The only reason I know that is I was born next to his daughter in the hospital.
Herschel Bernardi's the dad. Yeah. You remember this?
No, but I was told that.
If you remember that, right? Explains a lot.
My mother, you know, my mom's showbiz claim. You know, you were born next to Herschel Bernardi's daughter. That's great.
Now you were in Comedy's Dirtiest Dozen.
Yes, I was.
We're trying to find you in there, Ben.
You can't see me in front with a cigarette?
Is that you?
That's
me with the hair.
Wow.
Next to Stephen Pearl and between Otto and George and Stephen Pearl.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, that's you.
That's a great story. I was living with Rick Messina at the time. And
Rick Messina, who is?
Tim Allen's manager.
I mean, you got to tell the audience. Our audience doesn't know all these people. So Rick Messina.
You have an audience?
Yeah, we do. We get like 2,000 people here, so don't get nervous.
Oh, pardon me, fancy rich with your store-bought shoes.
With your store-bought
shoes. So Rick Messina was Tim Allen's manager. And
So this guy, Lenny Wong, I think his name was directing this movie called The Dirtiest Dozen. They wanted some edgy, dirty comics, I guess. And they wanted me to – they had a budget of like $300,000. So they were going to get – I think they were going to get Kennison at the time for
$100,000. Wow.
And then he backed out. Something happened. I don't know what the deal was. So then they were going to – they approached Dice Clay for, I think, like $10,000. This is way back in the day, right? And then he backed out the last minute. So they were going to – they asked me, instead of being on the show, if I would just host it for $2,500.
So, and you jumped at it.
I negotiated down further, I think.
I'll tell you what I'll do for two.
But I hosted it. We did it at the Meadow Lane Theater in the Village, and they just opened it up to anybody to come in. And I filmed, we filmed for like, 4 or 5 hours, and then they had me, I had to go back and loop it because my audio was off. So I was up there for, 17 hours or something like that. And then when it finally came out, I went to go see it with Hicks, and it was at the theater, and they go, whatever, it was, $750. And I go, yeah, but we're in this. It's great. $750.
Yeah, the guy at the movie theater don't give them.
You don't understand. We're actually in the movie. That's wonderful news. I'm very proud of you. $750. when it came out on video, and it says, I think of the box, it says Bill Creed.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah.
Well, at least it didn't say bakery.
You know, I have that that DVD, but it's somewhere in a box. I was trying to find it right before the show.
I got a check for like it was either $3.34 or 34 cents. $3.34 I get, it was 30 years ago, but the 34 cents. Yeah, less than a postage stamp. It's just an insult. I know. But what killed me is I was in the hospital about 7 years ago, and when I went to go pay the bill, it was just $68,000, and I couldn't handle it. And they were saying, "Well, it says here that you work for MGM, U of A, United Artists." And I go, "Oh, really?" Yeah, we have a check right here. I go, that $3.34 check. Yeah, you're getting paid. Oh, okay, all right. Yeah. Well, that'll be your down payment.
So you want a piece of that? $1,000.
You should chase MGM for the rest of my money.
But yeah, it was good that I did it, and a lot of the guys that were in it got a break. I mean, Chris Rock,
Tim Allen,
Otto and George. Man, how sad was that?
Otto and George, yeah. I mean, let me
call you. Called me up after that thing in Canada. You know what happened?
Yeah. Go ahead and say.
As far as I know, Otto and I were very close, but as far as I know, Otto was up in Canada working, and he suffered from, what was it? I'm trying to think of the exact name. He was paralyzed. His brother had to come up and take him back home on a train.
Yeah.
He was... like almost comatose, I believe, for like a month. His muscles had atrophied, and he had to learn how to walk all over again.
Yeah.
And he was telling me this stuff, and then he was asking me, I think I was working at the Borgata, and he called me up, and we were talking, and then the next day he died.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know you, we're in the same boat, man. Every time the phone rings at a certain time of night, you're like, fuck that.
This year's been a rough one, man.
I mean, we were talking yesterday about Vic Henley, who is a good friend of both of us. He did our show. He did this show last year.
Wow.
And, Vic was great. And just bang, gone, just like that, you know.
Do you flinch at all anymore?
Yeah.
Do you?
I do. Yeah. Especially when someone, I mean, we're not talking like someone
people in their 80s.
Yeah, we're talking 56.
Yeah, well, you know what though? The older we get, the more
I know
common it is, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
There's certain guys that just, you're like, what the, you know, because it used to be if a guy said, hey, man, did you hear about this guy? Like, you're lying. You're joking. What's the angle? And you go, oh, man, you know.
Well, you're friends with Hicks. I mean, how did that hit you? I mean, he was so young.
I wouldn't say I was like a friend of his. We worked together a couple times. He was always nice to me, but I didn't really know him that well. He just, I guess his situation was he knew and wanted to keep it to himself, I guess.
But everybody knew. I remember. Like, you know, he was showing up places, and he was, like, bone thin, and you were like, something.
Yeah, but you can't assume anything about people, man. That's how shit gets started. You know? That's why I try not to, unless they're going to tell you. And if they don't want to tell you, then there's probably a reason for it. You know?
Yeah. How well did you know Kinison much? Did you work with Kinison much?
I worked with used to bring him up a lot in the open mic at this place in L.A., the L.A. Cabaret. And it was funny because one of the best nights was they had the big room and the bar room. And, you know, we were in the bar room. And Gallagher was in the big room. And Gallagher's sister was drunk in the bar room. And I bring Kinison up. Do you know the story?
No, but anytime you say Gallagher.
And you know it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
So, you know, Kinison goes up there. And it's been a couple of us. You know, hey, cats are wacky. Hey, the airline food's nutty. And then, you know, you bring up Kinison. And all of a sudden, shit gets real. And we're in the back. Actually, I'm behind the bar, right, watching it go on. And he's talking, and he's screaming. And she says, you want to turn it down about 2 decibels, Gallagher's sister, right? So we're all like, oh, please, lady, you don't know what you're doing. Shut the fuck up, right? So he says something to her. So she throws a glass, hits the mic stand, and it splinters, and it cuts him in the thumb. So he starts anointing her with the blood, screaming all kinds of vile, very fucking funny things. And we're just dying. And Gallagher's, you know, smashing fruit in the next room, you know, hey, you know. And so it just became a real ugly scene. And then like a week later, I believe it was like a week later, maybe a month later, maybe my time's a little foggy, but he was on SNL and Carson. And he was doing the same shit people were walking out of the show for. You know, I worked with him a couple times out there. Not close friends, like, you know, right. I can say. Always a good guy, you know, always nice to me.
Now, I happened to hear Jim Brewer on the radio the other day, and they were talking about Kinison.
Name dropper.
And I heard him on the radio, and they were talking about Kinison. Right. And he said that Louis Anderson was very close with Kinison.
I guess, yeah.
And that Louis said, you could walk in a club in L.A., and there'd be a guy on stage, and the audience would be dead. And Louis would go, when was Sam on? Like, and it'd be like 2 hours. Like, Kinison would go up. Or,
you mean Louis said, oh, when was Sam on?
But you couldn't get the room back for like 2 hours.
You know what, man? Besides Pryor, and I think Robin was a big deal at the time, Sam was the only guy that anybody that who's up next, Sam, if you knew you're after him, like, fuck.
Man. Oh, fuck.
You know, but that was the only guy. But you'd still sit there and watch him because you never knew, even if you knew everything he was going to say, how it was going to play. And at that time, like I said, you know, there was no internet, no nothing. You heard about these people, and the people that didn't get to see him, that's the next night they were lined up for it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's bizarre.
That's a great point, Ben, because that would happen. Someone go, the guy last night, yeah. And suddenly everyone had to go back to see that guy. Now they just go online and look him up.
It's like, wasn't
the original viral?
Yeah.
Word of mouth.
Right on the Tonight Show with Carson, like twice in the same week.
Yeah.
Did Carson bring him back?
Yeah, and he originally wasn't auditioning for Carson when they went out to go see him and when they saw him in Boston.
Else, right?
They were there to see Lenny Clark. And then Lenny went on, and when he got off stage, Steven was supposed to go up, and he was going to talk to the Carson booker. The Carson booker didn't come out. He watched Steven Wright and then booked him.
Wow.
And it's like, it just goes to show you this business, anything can happen. Yeah, anything can happen at all.
Filthy business. What a filthy fucking business.
Unless you have a podcast, then nothing happens. so Ben, tell, what about, who were your real friends? Like you, who were the guys you hung with besides me? Who were the guys that you really liked?
Back in the day?
Yeah, back in the day.
Mick and I were good friends.
Mick Wazinski, yeah.
Somebody told me once when I was working with Mick to ask, bring your name up for stories because they were like, I think they called you the Wonder Twins. They were like, they were always, they always worked together and they would always had the best stories.
Well, Mick
pretty much different people back then, you know,
to say
the probably the best story is we went sailing. Remember the gig in Nyack?
Yeah.
Mr. Rips,
yeah.
Mick had bought a boat, a 26-foot sloop up there for like 20 grand or something. It was up in Nyack, and we had to sail it from Nyack to Seaford Oyster Bay, Long Island, right? And going around Coney Island is like one of the most treacherous reefs in the world. Supposed to be horrible. So we, I don't know what you want to talk about on the show, but certain substances were abused back then. and I'll just tell it this way because it's probably funnier if I just say we were on acid. But let's suppose we were on acid.
Let's just pretend.
And we decided to sail the boat from Seaford Oyster, from Nyack, New York to Seaford Oyster Bay. 3 days at sea with no tide charts, no water, no food, no knowledge of anything, no common sense. And,
shit.
Really? Wild three. Oh, yeah, man. It was a horrible 3 days.
Mr. Rips, was that what did a Russian guy own that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what happened? I'm working there.
Yeah, I know what happened.
And I'm working there, and I go up, and the mic was like taped. It was a complete mess. The fucking mic was a mess, right? And I do my act, and in the middle of my act, the mic implodes on me because it was like taped up. It was like the mic was like from 1922.
Right.
I come off, I go to get paid, and the guy goes, "Yeah, I docked money because you broke the mic."
And that's Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling, folks. Ben, stick.
Last call. Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.